Please enjoy this ringback tone while your podcast is reached.
This is Raquel and Chelsea, and you're listening to Baroque Bitches. Welcome to Baroque Bitches, your art and art history gossip podcast. I'm Raquel.
I'm Chelsea.
And so very, very excited to come back for part two of this.
Dude, I'm so excited for this one. Come on. Where's the tea?
And I immediately have to just correct a small error that I made in the first half. Emmeline Obermeyer, Emmy Al Stieglitz's first wife, she's not the Sears heir. I'm so sorry. It's actually his girlfriend is the Sears heir, the Dorothy Norman. Oh. So I got the wife and the mistress confused. And I'm sure Al did that like all the fucking time, dude. But I don't want to be like sorry for embodying a shitty, shitty dude. So I'm sorry, my mistake. But we're in our era of accountability. So I'm going to take accountability. Deep apologies. But yeah, so his first wife was Emmy Obermeyer. And don't get me wrong, she had like come from money, and the money thing factored into why they weren't getting divorced. But yeah, so there you go. Nice. So anyways, enough about that. This week we have more tea, more story, and then we're going to get into like a really important shift. So the story kind of like in the first half of Georgia's life. Really, I, like, feel for her in a way. Like, I feel like I leave off, like, oh, God, she's stuck in this shitty marriage. And
the things. Yeah. She's struggling with being – I mean, this is a time where women in art is – they're not taken seriously. And it's pretty wild how she kind of demanded to be taken seriously. And it's pretty inspiring and pretty cool, but
but she's married to somebody who like puts her into this box, and I feel for her, you know, like that sucks. But then the second half, I was like, I knew I didn't fucking like this. So we're going to go really deep
all week
here.
For the tea, man. Let's go.
And I'm really excited because we got some help this week on our episode. And so this is, I brought in an old friend. It's our first guest, an amazingly talented human, smart ass Baroque bitch. And I mean, we always want to keep things spicy, right? Variety is the spice of life. So I'm glad to get in like a third voice here. So I want to introduce the one, the only Evelyn Byrne. So thanks for coming on the show. We're so happy you're here. And I think the last time I saw you, we were both in Los Angeles and you're about to embark on this like amazing road trip to DC. And since then you've just done so, so many amazing things, but I want everybody to like get to know you. So can you tell me like about the art background a little bit? What started off the crazy art love? Oof.
I mean, I'm sure like both of y'all, it's just like you always, even since you're little, just feeling the need. Yeah. And like, I don't call myself an artist. I like to craft and create, but you know, I just make little stuff for friends and family and loved ones, but not as much as y'all. Y'all have the actual degree.
Girl, you're an artist. She does macrame. She's downplaying.
Totally.
And you just, like, have a creative mind. And I think, like, all art, it's just, like, getting out those weird things in your brain any way you can. Like, it doesn't have to be high art. I was talking about this last night with Chelsea. I made a painting of a Four Loko in college.
Ooh, I have it in my bathroom. I love it. It is coveted in the Estrada house for reals.
Hell yeah.
So you went to DC. Why did you go to DC? Can you tell everyone? She's amazing.
I mean, so I will just like plug like one of the most amazing programs that I think is happening in LA right now at the Broad Museum. It's called the Diversity Apprenticeship Program. And I had actually been struggling because I have an art history bachelor's and a minor in fine arts, but I've just been struggling to really break into the museum world. And I knew I didn't want to be a curator and, you know, I could do some registrar stuff, of course, but like I like to work with my hands, right? I like power tools. Yeah, I like crafting. Right. I like all that stuff. And so I actually was interested in art conservation, which is now my real goal, when I was an undergrad. But, you know, it's kind of, right? And this elusive field, like, ooh, it's so mysterious and hard. And how do you do like that?
How the hell do you get there, right?
That is the dream.
Right? It's just, it just feels like so unattainable. And so, yeah, I, you know, felt shot down in ways. And also just like there's not enough information, which I'm trying to change.
Right.
So, yeah. So then I tried to do some art handling in the Bay. Got told by big Russian dude that women don't do art handling. And I was like, okay.
Oh, they don't? Okay.
Watch me burn him.
So it's like, burn him.
Exactly. It's like, dang, okay, well then what can I, and then I got frustrated in the Bay, left, moved to LA, and then I found this diversity apprenticeship program for women of color, non-gender binary, however you identify, and it was perfect. It was exactly like, oh, yeah, thank God. Like, we had this amazing cohort and our supervisors, and so they throw us in, they train us up hella hard, and then they throw us into different institutions around the city, and then you get to kind of have concentrations. Like, so I was like, I've always been interested in conservation. And they're like, perfect. Let us have you work with this person and this person. And I met some of my most favorite mentors and favorite human beings. And still today, they are my support system in so many ways. I wouldn't be where I am. And that's where I applied for the pre-program conservation internship, now emerging conservation internship at National Museum of the American Indian, Smithsonian. So it led me all the way over there, and I'm loving it.
It's so exciting.
Yeah.
I never would have thought.
Dude. I mean, and you more recently got to work on a project with a pretty big headliner, right?
The most recent one I'm really proud of. I know my little picture, you guys saw me. I did work at the Pan American Unity Diego Rivera murals.
So crazy.
Under like the beautiful guidance of my mentor, Kiernan Graves of Site and Studio Conservation. She's an amazing mural conservator. And yeah, it was just, it was, pinch me.
That is totally a dream. Dude. So fucking crazy. So. I mean, were you like, fuck, like if I trip or if
there
I
was a moment there no there like, was a moment I thought I messed up and I started to cry. There was a moment I thought I caused cracking and a certain part, and I just like started to cry. She's like, no, I just look, it's been there, you didn't do it. And I was like,
oh my god, dude.
She's like, and,
dude, I mean, have you seen some of the art conservative, like the conservation work that's happened in like ancient Christian art of like
the Jesus.
That looks like the cake fails.
So I'm at his, and that is, I mean, I think conservation is more elevated than restoration.
Oh, right.
And that's why I think people like get it confused, because restoration.
What is the, I don't know. Oh, what's the difference?
Oh, yeah. So I don't know if I heard this example or if I came up with it one day.
Yeah.
But like, I like to say like, restoration is more of like, you see a broken chair, like you have a broken chair and one of the legs are broken, right? So a restorer, instead of a conservator or preservationist, would like slab some like wood glue, epoxy, you know, and it's going to be stable. It's going to be strong. It's going to be stable. Boom. But that fix is permanent / damaging to the original chair and its integrity and its materials versus conservation and preservation. We would create more of a barrier between the broken and like rest of the chair, the broken leg and the rest of it. And so, and then create a temporary adhesive hold and then like maybe in paint it a little bit, but everything of that still would have to be reversible, and that we would create these barriers. I won't go too in depth with that, but like, it's just so you know that like we're trying not to affect the like actual original integrity of the object, our brain. So it's more like, It's more like
you're trying to preserve the original and like make sure that, you know, if some science comes later on, that it's able to be reversed so that you can do it as it once was.
Yeah, I mean, listen,
I'm in awe of you. Yeah, I just like, you found your own path to the, like, where you wanted to go, and you literally dug that path for yourself, and you're like walking living proof that it, people can do it. So I just think you're amazing.
Oh, thank you. But I'm not the only one. I have a few other like colleagues and people who are like, you know, we are in the voice realm of like, hey, we're mixed indigenous, hey, we're here, we should be in charge of taking care of our belongings and our items that are connected to us. And the same with like any realm, like, hey, let's consult. And I think that that is finally getting pushed a lot more in our field, that, hey, let's consider the person who actually comes from these cultures, let's have them care for it because they can, and let's make it more accessible. So like I said, like, LA is doing a lot, like, and I just see so many, all the conservation grad schools are putting it out there and becoming more inclusive and diverse and accepting. And it's about time, and I'm excited. And
finally. I mean, are you trying to tell me that the art world was white dominated?
I mean,
I had no idea.
White male dominated? Yeah.
White male dominated? Yeah. No, I mean, that's great. And I mean, we're going to, that it definitely like speaks to the story we're going to tell here today. So you know, I really like decidedly didn't want to touch on this in the beginning because I wanted, and I hope you're all still with me, big Georgia fans, and I hope that you'll stay because you need to hear this. You need to hear this. So like, come on.
Oh, and it's all
going to
be tea too.
Oh, it's tea, 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 tea. So we're going to start off with some tea. We're going to get, you know, deep into some history. We're going to have some conversation. And then we're going to get into like a really fucking outrageous tea at the end.
Yes.
So just like a little palate cleanser at the end. Just a little dessert treat for you guys. So I got to ask you guys, are you ready?
To visualize.
Ready.
To visualize.
Are you? Don't tell me you're going to play that like fake Indian pipe music. I will.
Okay, but yeah, so, all right, let's visualize. New Mexico. From the moment I stepped off the plane, I felt it. O'Keeffe Country. You know, it's just so inspiring to be in the place she really immortalized in her paintings. I mean, the beautiful way she captures this vast, empty land. I already feel inspired. Maybe I'll even try some, like, local food. Ooh, I don't know. Ooh, cornflower. No. Okay. I am feeling adventurous, though. On the first day, we start off with O'Keeffe Country Tour, then we get to her home and Ghost Ranch, then we get to go see all the places she painted. These places are so iconic. I mean, she made them iconic. I really am in my O'Keeffe era, too. I bought some turquoise earrings at the airport. I have my Native American patterned shawl. Oh my God, it's going to be so good. I'm going to really look the part. I'm ready to go. Are you ready, Karen?
Stop.
So, O'Keeffe Country. Cool. I thought it was going to be a Gwyneth Paltrow quote, honestly.
They do have tours, too.
Oh,
I looked
God,
it up. They have tours.
Be right. So, welcome to Georgia O'Keeffe Part 2. Karen Goes West. you know. I mean, so I just feel like this is the type of conversation that's happened many a time by those traveling to New Mexico. And I mean, on a scale of 1 to 10, like, how infuriating is it? You know?
20.
And we're totally going to get there. We're going to get like deep into it. So we're going to dive deep into cultural appreciation versus appropriation today, talk more tea about Mabel Lujan, and get more into how we can just be better when it comes to Georgia O'Keeffe and just as consumers in general. And thanks, Evelyn, for coming along and helping out. Because, I mean, I'm not a subject matter expert here, but I'm certainly going to try. It's, you know, even reading, me and Chelsea were talking about this yesterday, like, I didn't know anything about Georgia O'Keeffe, but we both kind of had this assumption that she was like indigenous in some capacity. And
well, I kind of assumed that from her work. And I mean, I'm sure I've seen a picture of her, but it was with the look that she was going for. So I was like, okay, I'm sure she's got to have some background. I didn't know she was a white lady from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
I thought she had some sort of background or some sort of heritage to kind of to bring into her work in that capacity, because it's all that, like, I got – to me, it's that iconic Southwest style of like the desert colors and the animal skulls and that kind of like, oh, okay, I'm into it. Yeah. And it's now that I did part one or listened to part one, I was like, wait a second, she stayed in New York.
She's just some white bitch from Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's just something I did not know that stuff. And I totally assumed without checking up on it.
Grew up in the South, like you grew up all over kind of, but you have spent a pretty significant amount of time in those areas, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I grew up all my formative years in Southern Colorado from like age 1 to 18. So yeah, like I grew up going there. My communities aren't from there, but yeah, you know, you are taught and like, in like most art senses, right? That like, oh, she's the best. She like, look at how gorgeous her art is. And you know, I think we all ate the shit a little bit at the beginning. And it's not to say that her images aren't beautiful. It's just like, oh, but then when you realize, oh, it's just some old white lady that came over, you're like, oh, wait, no. So yeah, and then like, okay. Once you become like, you're like, oh, wait.
Now I feel a little cringy now.
Yeah. And like, you know, anywhere that you grow up in the mountains, you see anyone's an amateur artist for the mountains and the desert and like even
their discovery.
Even me.
Well, that's right. Yeah. And that's part of it is like this stems not only from like her practice, but goes to inspire on others, and then everybody thinks she's like an artistic desert bitch, right? So we're gonna get there hard, but first we're gonna pick up where we left off, Georgia returning to New York. So little just recap, remember she had just had her sexual awakening, she's intermingling with a bunch of different artists. Yeah. She's gotten a taste for life, what life is like without Al, but it's very much in, like, she still loves him. She's still grappling with, like, loving him, but being in, you know, controlled by him and trying to figure out what that means, especially because he has this other lady. So after what I'm sure was, like, a super sexy, sexy trip, lots of learning, openness. She returns to Al in New York. And at this point, she sort of feels like her life has been increasingly divided and compartmentalized between like what she wants and having to uphold this relationship with him. And she also realizes she's been doing things his way for like way too fucking long. I mean, motherfucker even tries to make her become friends with the mistress.
Oh.
I was like, you guys would really get along. Like,
I will.
What a fucking asshole.
This fucking guy, I swear.
So George is even quoted when talking about Dorothy, because she's met her and had to have a conversation. And she calls her a bowl of hot mush.
That's a great burn.
I'm taking that. I like that. Bowl of hot mush. Wow.
And Al's like such a dick. So he's very critical of Georgia. He's constantly trying to tell her what she should and should not do. both in her art and in her personal life. So he wouldn't let her drive. He wouldn't let her really take risks. He liked keeping her bedridden. She gets offered to do this, like, mural that was contracted for Radio City Music Hall. And he's like, no, 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 no. And she's like, watch me, motherfucker. I'm going to do this shit. And she's so excited to finally, like, kind of stick it to him. And then the wall's preparatory work, it's determined that, like, this isn't going to work out. And it just, like, breaks her heart. And she's already super anxious and having a tough time. And, I mean, your partner is supposed to be a voice in your head that you come to work through issues. And it sounds like every time she does, it's just a point that creates a bigger issue. Mm-hmm. She's not a confrontational person. And so she's keeping a lot of this inside up until this point, and he's driving her fucking nuts.
I always say, too, if somebody gives me something and I'm like, don't say it, I just noted. Okay, noted.
Damn, that's scary. I hope you never say that
to me. I'll never say that to you. Oh, my God. No, that's usually have to do with, like, work-related stuff of, like, okay, don't freak out. Don't freak out on this employee. Like, okay, that's noted. Okay. Like, and that's going to be in my head forever.
But we've all had those relationships, right, where it's like, it starts out as a good thing, but then you're just so far apart, mm-hmm. and you're trying to make it work, and then it's like,
I just want you to support me, man.
But everything becomes a point of contention, and that's very much where she's at. But she's also, like, pretty fucking famous at this point. She's selling work. She's gained notoriety. She's the breadwinner of the family. She doesn't need this fucker anymore. throw him away. So in the summer of 1933, they return to St. George and his family's house, and the environment that's just been killing her. She can't stand these people. And instead of going with this dude she's madly in love with, like she had in years past, she's going now with this fucking huge frustration with him. And so all of this sort of festering inside her causes her to have a quite literal nervous breakdown. So psychoneurosis is an oppression of unconscious conflict, which basically is just fancy for, like, you're not dealing with your shit, girlfriend.
Yeah.
Like, you gotta address what's going on. And symptoms can include, like, low self-esteem, fearfulness, irritability, worrying, helplessness, easily angered, withdrawing from friends, losing your interest in your favorite things, difficulty breathing, uncontrollable crying, thoughts of self-harm or suicide. So it's serious. Like, this is serious stuff.
Yeah.
So she stays in the hospital for 2 whole fucking months trying to recover from this. And Al is barred from seeing her because the hospital says that if she sees you, it might fucking kill
her.
Yeah,
yeah.
Like, she cannot with you right now.
Bye.
You go away. And Georgia quits painting again. So this is the third time she's had to quit painting because she's had some sort of mental health or health thing.
Dang.
And obviously the story keeps going. So it's not a lot.
Love you. Bye.
Love you. Bye. Okay, that's it. No. So she does pick it back up, but 2 years later.
Wow.
And this is a wake-up call for Al. He's like, okay, I'll stop. I'll stop seeing the bitch. I'll stop. Well, she's not a bitch. You know what I mean. So he stops the affair, and he's like, I'll do it. Listen, baby, I'm so sorry, blah, blah, blah. But now their relationship is just on very different terms. She agrees to get back with him, but she is not going to St. George. And instead of going to St. George, she's going to New Mexico every summer. So 3/4 of her life is spent with him, and then those few months are reserved for her to do her own thing and, you know, sexual adventures. I just have to cheat on you like a 1/4 of the year. It's fine. Don't worry about it.
Okay. Wow.
So their relationship continues this way until he dies. He has a stroke July 12th, 1946. She immediately flies back to New York to be with him because that's summertime. And he dies the next day. So.
Oh, man. Okay.
Well, yeah. So bye, Al.
Bye, Al.
Don't let the door hit you where the good Lord splits you. Bye-bye. So Al dies and her new life begins, but it's also like she's rediscovering herself as who she used to be. She gets to return to all these things she grew up loving to do, and above all else, being alone as much as possible. And because remember, our girl's really reclusive. She's also the center of a lot of fucking attention. Because she's famous. And so she moves to New Mexico on a more permanent basis. And let's talk about this move to New Mexico. So in order to do this, we need to go back a little bit in the story, back to Mabel Dodge. And remember, this is her girlfriend who, like, first invites her over. Mm. And so she's the one that invites her to stay, and they have, like, a sexual renaissance situation. And so Mabel Evans Dodge Stern Lujan. All those names are for how many husbands she has.
Oh, she's collecting.
She had lots of marriages. And
wow.
She was a super fucking rich socialite born in Buffalo, New York. And she loved art and always loved to be surrounded herself with, like, these artsy people. Kind of like a Peggy Guggenheim, like, you know, yeah, what's
she's
my
artmatized.
Yeah, but she loves drama and she loves bringing people together. Yeah,
clearly, like, she's got how many husbands?
Being like the epicenter of it all. And that is nice. So lots of drama. And it's important to note that New Mexico wasn't a state until 1912. And part of that is because there was, like, this debate against it joining the U.S., like, because it was, quote, too many Mexicans and too many Indians.
Oh.
So there was a lot of initiative for, like, rebranding New Mexico for those in favor of getting it to be a part of the union. And that rebranding is intended to inspire not just government, but also, like, American people. And it creates this image of New Mexico to be, like, that sought after rugged Westerner landscape.
Yeah, like the Wild West kind
right,
of thing,
the
right?
The Wild West. But the worst thing that they do is they advertise it as this, like, empty land where nobody lives. And so it's like, come to New Mexico, like, build your own places and come tap into your discovery adventure traveler
phase. There, it like, starts early. So, okay.
Mabel Dodge is, like, very much like, ooh, so different. Let's go see the world, see something that hasn't been explored yet. But guess what? Very much already explored, Mabel. Already explored. Already spoken for. So Mabel Dodge is part of this crew that hears these stories and she's like, foreign, interesting, curiosity super peaked. So she sends her husband at the time, like, go check it out, Maurice. Like, go over there. Go see what it's about. And he writes back to her, dearest girl, do you want an objective in life? Save the Indians, their art and culture, and reveal it to the world. Oh. And so then, yeah, so.
Okay.
So much to unpack there.
I'm like, wait, what?
So, what is so bad. At?
Okay.
Yeah. So she sees a medium after this, and the medium has a...
Okay.
I mean, so she sees a medium, and the medium has this vision of her surrounded by indigenous peoples, supposedly, and then Mabel, after that, has a dream that her then-husband's head is floating. And that it turns into the face of an indigenous man. And she's like, okay, the signs are here. I got to go to New Mexico.
Is that
the sign? Like, obviously, it's in the cards. Okay, wow. And so she moves to Taos, New Mexico. And she purchases acres and acres of land that were not hers to purchase. And builds a 21-room house out of adobe built by local Pueblo peoples. And this whole time is just like completely tone deaf to what's happening. She writes about how inspired she is about the local people's ability to live without materialism while she sits in this huge fucking house
that they built.
That has indoor plumbing. Wow. And, like,
okay, all right.
And so then she goes to, like, see a tourist attraction and sees a drumming demonstration and meets Tony Luhan, and she's like, that's it. That's the guy in my dreams. Oh. And so they get married.
Oh, another man. Okay. Boom.
Which would have been controversial at the time. But so her house sort of becomes this epicenter meeting place for artists, creative types, mostly all white people. D.H. Lawrence, Ansel Adams, Willa Carter. Yeah. Martha Graham, Thornton Wilder, Greta Garbo, Jean Toomer, and John Collier. And so what is, like, she's well-intended in this purpose, mind you, which I'm sure lots of people are, but it quickly manifests into being something that is just truly just so invasive. And and Georgia moving to New Mexico, knowing the notoriety that she had, just perpetuates this narrative that starts happening. Okay. So Georgia moves to New Mexico and has three different residencies there throughout her lifetime. And she makes a lot of work that people to consider to be like the New Mexico paintings, quote unquote. Yeah, yeah. And the paintings demonstrate that landscape that you can see today. So lots of different works are created between the 40s and all the way up to the 80s, because she lives to be fucking almost 100 years old. And we see a lot of landscape of New Mexico, so much that part of New Mexico is called, quote, O'Keeffe Country. We see
Doesn't like, it get in, like, you go into the airport and you see the sign or something like that, right? Isn't it, like, really in your face?
Yeah, like, you can go in and see it. And so, you know, so Evelyn, I mean, we've talked about your art background, but I think it's important to highlight your, like, connection to the story.
My sides are more from Texas. Like, my dad's side is Mexican Indian, Michigan. My mom's is Comanche, Cherokee, and Vietnamese, which is, again, weirdly very Texan. But I was born in Texas, San Antonio. My mom luckily raised me in Colorado. But yeah, growing up in Southern Colorado and always popping over to New Mexico has always just been, you know, so yeah, they're similar and very different at the same time.
Right.
But it is crazy with the O'Keeffe, actually, because I remember I was watching a commercial I think it was even on Hulu, and I found the article related to it because it was literally like O'Keeffe Country. It was showing this white woman coming to visit, and I was like, what the hell? Like, this couldn't have been passed by most of the, like, at least the majority of New Mexican residents, especially from the Pueblos. And I will say, though, I looked up the article. This is from KRQE. And actually the O'Keeffe, like, you know, Estate Foundation was kind of like, hey, she might have said.
Not cool.
Yeah, they were like, no, right. She might have said that she believes that this is her country and claiming it was hers. But they're just like, we're not trying to further project that kind of narrative.
Yeah.
Which is great. Good. Which is great. And yeah. I really, like, respect that. And, like, at least this foundation, you know, this current artist foundation in the state is like, hey, like, you know, we're Ghost Ranches and Abiquiu. It actually is on Morehenazado Pueblo land.
Right. There's a bunch of different,
you know,
communities that are all from
in and around there,
that area,
and or got placed there. And so, yeah.
Right.
And at least, like, recently I saw that Ghost Ranch is actually opened up, because before it was like, oh, you can rent it for, like, a private hang and bougie. Right. But now I've seen some more, like, they've invited some whatever Pueblos that want to hold some events or music or however have you there. They've invited that there. Hopefully they're not charging them. But
they're like, oh, you can come now.
But I'm not too sure.
But it'll be $150 a night.
But, yeah. You know, and oh, I think, man, that's where everyone – that's where the movement is. It's like, you know, we don't have to go into the whole line back movement. But it is also like – it is like just obviously y'all – whiter folks are here. It doesn't mean there's not even white distantly in my family too. All this is here, but, like, how do we live in more open communication and understanding and, like, being, and which we obviously with this podcast, which y'all do, be like, this art was great, but the artist was not so great. And I think that's a good way to open the conversations. We can appreciate the artwork, but also question who the makers were. And definitely, right. like, you opened up with that hilarious Karen monologue thing.
and that
is sadly what is happening. You know, like, I talk to my friends in the different pueblos in New Mexico, just, and then if not that, like, local puertorriqueños too, just being like, hey, like, we're really yeah. getting pushed out. Like, you have people from California, people from the Midwest, just buying them out left and right, because they're like, oh man, $300,000 for a 5-bedroom? We'll pay you $500. So you have all these different mixes of people, like, cultures that have also been there too, that aren't necessarily Pueblo, but are like Mexican descendant and what have you, that are still being pushed out too, because, like, people want to move here. Well, where can they go? Like, you have all the different Pueblos and, like, other reservations out there, so they can't stay. And so, and yeah. Airbnb, we all know. So, mm-hmm. right, yeah. like, I'm joking, like, oh, like, Georgia O'Keeffe is the original, like, Karen Airbnb, but, like, I mean, kinda.
But, like, a little bit, right?
She marketed it.
But that's, she gave us the romance of it, I think, like, with her work. And even, like, with her style, with that, like, signature kind of, like, witchy style of, like, I am this lone woman in the desert. And you're like, that actually sounds real nice.
Well, and that's part yeah. of it. I think that this story highlights is, like, she's not, a person going out there that's like, oh, we got to get these people out so I can be here. It's more like, oh, I am inspired by these people, but there needs to be some awareness, right?
Like, yeah. so I think it's like that, those like clothing companies and stuff that will say that they're native inspired, and you're like, okay, like, but who's making it though? Like, yeah. who made it though? I'd like to yeah. know.
Well, and I mean, I think it's just important that we, like, introduce the clear definition of, like, what appropriation is versus appreciation, because I think people get it so confused of, like, yeah. no, I like, I want to, like, you know, dress, like, and be, like, and I like it so much. And, like, where is the line, you know? Where is the line?
Well, I mean, like how just said, you have these clothing brands that are Native inspired. It's like, well, no, if you want to wear that, like, buy something that's actually made by a Native or Indigenous person that sells it. Right. Like, yeah. and guess what? You're actually going to have to pay the price point of hundreds of more dollars right. because that was mm-hmm. time and craft. And
handmade,
and yeah. that deserves, you know, throw on extra zeros on there. Fine. If you,
right.
you, and you,
because it took me fucking hours.
And, yeah, you, and that's my thing. Of course, you can appreciate this art. Like, there are, you know, these people, depending on who they are, but most of them, it's like that their crafts are taught from familiar ways. And, like, of course, and then they're out there selling it. Sure. Then don't haggle with them. Also, like, that's their price set. You pay that. They have worked. You don't know what yeah. it takes to craft and make this. You don't know what stories, what cultural stories, what traditions have been fully passed down. That all goes into a lot of what is made. So pay for it. Fine. Great. Wear it. Appreciate it. Don't buy knockoffs. I don't know.
Don't take it and then learn how to make it.
Yeah, there's that too.
And then sell it, right?
And, you know, and that's where you have to, you know, I will commend, like, Ralph Lauren. Like, they actually just hired, like, one of, you know, I don't know her personally, but, you know, I follow her so much. Naomi Glasses, who's this Dene Navajo weaver. Like, she's just so young and so brilliant and talented. And they actually have her side by side helping design, and her other, like, the rest of the Native crew just helping her with those designs. So it's like, okay, you have a big major brands that are actually doing the work now. And it's like, and they're going to show the price point, like, boom. So it shouldn't come cheap.
Right.
And why yeah. should anything come cheap? Like, yeah. you know, this is handmade stuff, whether it be leather, beads, woven. And yeah, so that's a big, and silver and turquoise. Like, I mean, you know, some people can rock it, some people can. I get it, you know.
I just, like, I can't. I mean, I'll tell you this, like, I have this turquoise ring, and then I met you and Josh, and I was like, I can't wear it anymore. Like, it was just like, who did it better? Like, I'm never going to do it better. Like, I'm not even going to try. Like, this is, and it was, like, handmade, like, expensive. No. But see, I'm like,
that's,
no,
that's not.
I can't do it anymore.
No, see, that's what we, that's not to say that. I mean, sure, don't.
No, I can't step to it, Evelyn. I'm not even going to try. Can't step to the birds. You guys got so much swag. You guys look so dope all the time.
Don't. We oh, don't we reals. Don't have to compliment my brother too much on this, but good job, Josh. But
I mean, and like Georgia, so we'll talk about the work just a little bit. Like she has, I think, one of the more famous skull paintings is Ram's Head, Blue Morning Glory, and it's that, you know, the skeleton head with that blue flower stuck on it. Like, it honestly reminds me of, like, when you garnish a fucking cocktail, like, on a trip, like, the way that she places it into the skull.
It's a little gives me Home Goods.
Yeah. Like, right? And it's, you know, it's, like, part of her more realism approach, and it's just... It's like she sets it against this vast landscape like she likes to do, and it kind of looks surreal. But – and the, like that image, I feel like, of the skull was just not hers to take and reproduce, knowing how much notoriety she had. Like, it's not like she's just like a Joe Schmo. And now knowing about the flowers and the vaginas, like she was just doing a study, you know, a painting study. Like she wasn't like – she did not understand the cultural significance of like skeletons. And I know that it changes across like many, many cultures, but she even calls them, she's quoted as calling them bony trash. And then, I mean, so, I mean, is there any, like, I know the, like, from reading about it, the cultural significance of like local peoples in this story, but is there any significance like in your culture, Evelyn, like your background with skeletons and animal, you know, bodies?
I mean, I guess that's where I try to like tell, like, I mean, I, like I said, I'm mixed. I'm, you know, I have, and I wasn't taught traditionally, but like for the most part, what I've been taught in is just like animal skulls, if they were treated well before upon death, or how they are taken care of after, is really important. And I think that could be the same. Like, people kind of are like, oh, well, you're not willing to handle like human remains, but you're willing to handle animal remains. And it is like, they are, you know, there's a lot with a lot of communities, they are, animals are in relation to us, but I would say, like, the weight and the consciousness of humans can, and let's just say the lingering, I don't know if you guys are spiritual in that sense, like, you can feel the energy of something.
No, we are. We're not like, religious, but we believe in ghosts.
Exactly. So it's like, okay, how, I don't feel like my handling of a human skull versus a cow skull is the same. I feel like this animal, like, hopefully lived a more simple life. And I can respect that by, like, you know, honoring that. And then, you know, it'd be a big, big thing to go down. But I'm not necessarily – I don't – I mean, I didn't know that she called them trash things. Because I'm, like – I think it's very natural, too. Just, like, in the desert, you do see these skull and remains. And it's, like, that is the natural order of life. So it's not a, it's not an ominous thing, per se. It can be – like, they can be used in ceremonies, they can be used respectfully, or, like, you know, in some cases and cultures, like, okay, if you have this part of the animal, skull, feather, you embody that power that they had in their life, and now it's on to, you know, given to you, either forever or in a certain ceremonial sense. So I think, yes, it sucks that she regarded them as such. I did not know that, but I don't doubt it. But yeah, and yeah, I mean, not to say that, like, so there's a cow skull painting with like the little pink rose. I actually got to pack up when I was working at LACMA, and I was like,
did you like fart on it or anything?
It was so pretty that I didn't. I was like, oh cool, I'm gonna take a little selfie, you know, like, I was like, this is pretty. And it's not to say that, you know, I can appreciate it. And I think she did a really pretty way of doing it. But yeah, like, I mean, I have like carved my brother's, like, kind of one of his, like, adopted aunties, like, passed, and she gave him this really cute, gorgeous beaver skull. So I carved a design for him as an anniversary for her 4 year of her passing for him, just to be like, okay, like, so I think if you have that reverence for these creatures that, you know, whether they fully served you or you recognize that how they were in relation to you, that's important. Like, I have a right. big-ass cow skull sitting on my wall right now, too, that my friend's grandpa, like, had on the farm and died. So she was like, oh, yeah, here. Like, this is really pretty. Like, you know, it died of old age. And I guess it got, like, maybe ran off or something. Like, they didn't find it till years later. So it's like, okay, that was
right.
that was natural and no harm, no foul in that.
I think, too, there's something different about the idea of death in different cultures too, of, you know, of that there's still the spirit within the dead thing. And I have a bunch of taxidermy like right here. I'm like looking at them right now. And I talk to them all the time. Like yeah. they're my buddies. And because I know that there's still a little, I hope there's still like a little inkling of the spirit in them, and I hope that they appreciate. I mean, I make them really nice.
Well, I think, like, I mean, and I think, you know, it's not lost on me that we're decades apart. I mean, we're almost 100 years from when she moved to these places. You know, reading about some of the things that were happening, like government incentives, like it's thought that government was actually poisoning the local communities, their livestock and wild horses and things like that. Yeah. And so they'd be found dead and she'd go and collect them and people would be like, what the fuck is she doing? Like leave them there. It's almost like she took these things that weren't her own and then paints them. And it's like, was that her image to take? I don't know. Like, you know, was it like knowing the significance that it probably had? Because she's like intermingling with the people that live there at this point. She should know and have like that awareness. But so is there a way to visit these places and be better? Or is it better to just like stay the fuck out and not go on these? I mean, I'm certainly not going on an O'Keefe country, like horseback riding tour, but I will say, like, researching this, there across many articles is like, oh no, the locals love Georgia. They loved her so much. They were so grateful she was there. Like it's almost like this, like trying to hide the actual sentiment of like her being there. You know,
and then like tea when she leaves. I'm like, oh my god, that's fucking mighty.
I mean, I think you would say this if you go to anywhere too. Is like respect the local people, buy local. You know, just tread lightly. And because New Mexico, in between all those places, are so special, and like you have all these gorgeous tales of resistance that I feel like that's what we always joke about. Oh, like the West, like, ugh, man, like kept fighting, but it's like no, colonization moves slower that way. But right. Yeah, I just think that the beauty is there, and anyone can and appreciate it. Sure, just don't be loud and rude and disrespectful, and just. You know, with like, obviously with some like white folks, don't be like, well, you know, I didn't do it. My da da da. And it's like, no, that's not what we're saying. Gosh. That's not what anyone's saying right now. Like,
yeah. Well, yeah, it's not like we're not trying to say that you did it. Yeah. Like, don't get an ego about it, right? Like, this isn't. No. About that, it's more just like,
and just it's not about you.
Be aware. be goddamn aware and be respectful. Yeah. And yeah, know your place. Like you want to, like, you know, if there's dances or powwows or you see like a ceremonial feast and happening, it's not to say that those other people can't come in unless they tell you you can't come in. Then you do not come in. You're not allowed to participate. But if they say that, then you watch. You be respectful. You be quiet. And it's like going with, you know, like honestly, anywhere, experience any other new culture. Like just be respectful and.
Yeah.
Right. And I completely agree with you. And I know this stuff.
I know you know.
But yeah. People to hear this. Like, you want to go. Like, I feel like people go into these environments and they sort of are like, they freak out a little bit. Like, they don't know how to act. And then they're like, oh, that's so cool. Like, where can I get that necklace you have? And like, it's like, no, that's not. It's not from TJ Maxx. It's not from Target. Like, come on.
Yeah.
And they just like.
Disclaimer too, like, in no way am I an expert of all the different, you know, I just, you know, I have my own I, you know, I talk, and like, that's the whole thing. It's like, how do you communicate? How do you talk within community? How do you work with others? And that's all that we're all ever asking for. Like, just, you know, ask someone, just get some info, and like, which literally this podcast does. Like, how can I research? How can I figure this out?
Yeah.
So that's just hella important. And yeah.
I think too, like, the whole like Karen debacle of like that, I mean, that character of, or a caricature of a Karen is just like, oozes disrespect. Like, everyone should only respect me. This is mine. And you're like, oh, okay, like, there's other people. Like, just, you're not the only one. It's not about you.
Yeah, relax. Like, going into, like, a restaurant and being like, you know, why do they make it that way? No, I don't like it this way. Or even just, like, maybe the culture is different, so the way the interaction is different. And it's like, it's okay for the interaction to be different. Not everybody needs to like go up to you and be like, so how's it going, folks? Like, you know, like, it's like, because cultures are different. Ideas of respect are different everywhere you go. It doesn't all, like, sameness isn't what you're after. You can't like only look for differences in the area that you want. Like, you're looking for a difference when you go on the horseback riding tour, but you want things to be the same when you walk into the hotel and the restaurant. Like, girl, get together. Sure. Yeah. Keep your head down. Go on Google. Like, come on.
Anyway, wait, what's the NT with this later?
Oh, dude. So we got some stuff here to get into. So Georgia gets macular degenerative disease, which basically is where you progressively lose your eyesight.
Oh,
and for someone as like independent as her, this is not easy. Mm. I mean, she's, you know, does her own gardening, makes yogurt.
She makes her own clothes or something, you said?
She makes her own clothes. Wow. She presents to the public as a very, like, reserved, closed-off sort of personality. But it's thought that, like, she could be witty. She could be kind of fun. And she would laugh. Like, she would have those kind of moments. She's not making it around as good as she was before is the point. And she's fiercely independent. And her house is always, like, getting visitors. And I think that's ironic because she fucking hates people.
Moved out to the fucking desert to get away from you people.
And so people are always going to her house. And she's super reclusive. And one day she gets a visitor whose name is Juan Hamilton. So he goes over to her house with a friend, and he knows who she is because everybody fucking knows who she is. And he goes to do a plumbing job. And afterwards, true to form, Georgia calls the friend and is like, never bring another friend here again, and like hangs up the phone. Well, later he gets word that, like, if you go in the morning, you could get some work. Like, she usually hands out jobs in the morning. She's so gracious that way. it's like that day labor sort of vibe. Like, you go in the morning and you might get like a scrap of food because she has a fucking $1 million, but God forbid she pay people fairly. So anyways, Juan goes back and she's like, oh,
you're cute.
You're like, you're hot. You're young. Duh. Maybe he'll be my friend. So he's 58 years younger than she is.
I take back the boink boink. Take back the boink boink.
Stop. Wait, how old is he?
So at this point when they meet, she's like 84, and I can't do fast math, guys. What is that?
84 minus.
Wait, 88. Hold on.
He's 26. He's 26. Did she look?
That is wild.
26. Let me double. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. No. That's it. That's it. No. 58 years apart.
She is your grandma's age. I don't.
Dude. Woo.
Yeah. Very much so.
Great grandma. Great grandma.
Very grandma.
And for some of us.
Wow. Okay. Tell us everything.
He was born 1945, and she was born in 1887. So
That's real.
Yeah, big.
That's a lot of time. That's a whole life of a person. Wow,
it's definitely an old young vibe. So rumor has it that they're doing it, and they're doing it often. Georgia said all the men artists can have young women, but people think it's shocking that I might have a young man in my life.
I mean, that's young though, man.
Yeah, like, not even in his 40s, but 20s. Like, shit.
Dude. God. Okay. Good for her.
I mean, I guess. Like, what the
fuck? Go, girl. Get it done. I mean, she's got, you know, the age difference with Stieglitz. So I just thought she liked older guys because he was like 23 years older than her. But yeah. I guess when you're 84, there's really not a big market for people above 100.
And I guess just
get it up and do it. That's
true.
Wow. But yeah, so. And I mean, at this point, she's well beyond giving a shit. Like, when she had that affair with Stieglitz, she was like very much like, oh, you know, I don't want people talking about me. And now she's like, hey, talk about me, motherfucker.
Who cares?
I'm 84, don't give a shit.
Who cares?
Yeah. And so Juan really cared what people said. Like, he became like her side by side companion. He'd do everything for her day in and day out. And she invites him on trips with her. And they
one of her getting cooks, something out of this.
Is this like a what was it? Oh fuck. It's like a sky.
The one with Jack Black.
Oh, I was thinking of the one with the Liberace. And they
God, Michael Douglas and Matt Damon. That is the height of their careers for me. Such a good fucking movie. Oh my God.
Yes.
It is so good.
Yes.
Wow.
But no.
Anyways. Oh.
No, because Georgia does not make Juan get a bunch of plastic surgery or do a bunch of drugs. So what ends up happening is Georgia dies inevitably. In New Mexico in 1986 at age 99, and she leaves two homes and the better part of $70 million estate. And guess who she leaves it to?
Juan.
Oh, she leaves it to Juan.
Yeah, he knew what he was doing. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Well, and see, and that's out of this.
And that's what everybody thought. Like, the family freaks out. They think he's manipulating her.
But he was there for her, so whatever.
He was super there for her, and you know,
and he was dicking her down.
Yeah, like, he deserves it.
He put in the work. He put in the work, guys.
One of her cooks even said, "Like, I'll cook for you, but I'm not cooking for him." When he started staying the night over, and she was like, "Get the fuck out, then! Like, I don't need your cook services." And the cook like goes to the tabloids and's like, "He's leaving his beer cans everywhere and blah, blah, blah." And he's like, I like to drink beer, but I wasn't like getting wasted. But yeah, so I thought that was funny. Like, she fires the cook to keep her boy toy, which I get. Yeah. I mean, I guess I would do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to judge me, really? Like, I'm Georgia fucking O'Keefe.
Like, I have $70 million. I can hire another guy.
But so I thought like, oh yeah, he played his cards right. Well, he gives back the majority of this, like all of it back to the estate. Because, I mean, he knew people were going to come the fuck after him, I'm sure. And he didn't want to deal with it. Okay. So
he's got a great mustache. He's got a great mustache. You know, he's kind of cute. Yeah, he's not bad. He's tall.
I mean, see him now. Hold on.
Okay.
So, you know, her legacy. Georgia was the first woman in the U.S. to have a museum solely for her.
Oh.
Her works sell for multi-millions of dollars. The highest one was Jimson Weave, and it sold for $44 million in 2014.
Wow.
People fucking love her. She's appeared in works by Cindy Sherman, Miriam Shapiro, Judy Chicago. Like, mm-hmm. And the feminist art movement in general just, like, eats her shit the fuck up.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we're talking about person at the party, I had to do two. I had to do two.
Okay.
So tell me if you agree. Kristen Stewart meets Rachel Dolezal.
I don't know who Rachel Dolezal
is. Oh, it's the chick that pretended to be black.
She pretended to be black.
She was like working at like, NAACP or something even?
Yeah, so she she was born to white parents.
Oh, okay,
herself as black, and she's a former member of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People. So I know it's like not as that extreme, right? But just because me and Chelsea thought she would like had indigenous background, I feel like she didn't like, it's like she took on that persona hard enough that she doesn't, you know.
And now there's O'Keefe Country.
But how does Kristen Stewart, I mean, like, I love her, she can't act.
So
but.
Yeah.
So Kristen Stewart notoriously does not like to be, you know, with people. She kind of keeps to herself.
She's a loner. Okay. Yeah.
She kind of also taps into like this closed off persona. I think it's more about the way she presents and also just
I think her sex life does get talked about a lot, and she probably doesn't fucking like that.
It does get talked about a lot.
Do you feel like the, I mean, I still like the Gwyneth Paltrow that I am like.
You think that she's Gwyneth Paltrow? So
a little. Like, remember, have you heard the quote with Gwyneth Paltrow about yoga?
No, the quote with Gwyneth Paltrow about yoga?
She's like goes to a studio in LA or something, and apparently one of the front girls is just like kind of giving her toot, and she was just like, girl, like I've been doing this before you were born, even though yoga literally isn't white, and was just like, this is my shit, I own this. It was either yoga or Pilates, but Pilates is German. No, so yoga. And was just like, you don't even know. And, like, this is mine. And somebody, the people are like.
Okay.
You didn't invent yoga.
You didn't invent yoga. Georgia O'Keefe didn't invent New Mexico. Yeah, I don't know. Given her that, like, I just do all these things naturally on my own. But yet, I have a team that, and actually, I just talked to another coworker that said, ooh, I can't remember the designer right now. But she. Georgia O'Keefe's like famous like cloaks and stuff,
right?
I believe were designed by this one designer that she was besties with, so she probably gave her the patterns. They weren't even original to Georgia O'Keefe. She may have gotten the
probably
patterns
not.
Made them, so
probably
she's
not.
Giving. I mean, not to over.
Dude, no, she is Gwyneth. Okay,
yeah.
And like, by the by, I looked up the reviews on the candle, and I knew it would fucking make me mad. I'm glad I didn't buy it because it is right no. Now. If you look up the reviews, it's like. Oh, it combines sandalwood with geranium.
I knew it was going to be you know what sandalwood. I remember Chelsea saying,
if this shit smells like sandalwood, I'm going to be pissed off.
I mean, prove it. That's all I'm saying, okay? Prove it. Like, if you're going to, you have to have a scratch and sniff of what it actually smells like.
Yeah, before I buy it.
The candle because,
yeah, like, $135.
What? I'm talking, I mean, you guys, I'm thinking lawsuit here. Like,
yeah, if this doesn't
smell
like vag,
fucking advertising, it does not smell like vag. There's no way.
Well, because Gwyneth Paltrow's vagina smells like sandalwood, so you can't prove it. And I thought, well.
I mean, yeah, I'm just saying. I bet you. Yeah, I bet you her fucking vagina does not smell like sandalwood. It makes me so fucking mad.
It smells like bone broth.
And almonds, because that's all a bitch fucking eats. Mm-hmm. Okay, I feel like this is turning into like an anti-Gwyneth sort of podcast, but she's so easy to hate on.
Whatever. Wow.
Evelyn, if you had to have a headline for a Baroque Bitches episode, what would your headline be?
Was it? It'd be like, never not calling out racist bitches. I don't know.
That's it, though. That's true to form. True to form, yeah, for sure. Like,
calling out white supremacy 100%. Something like that. Something like that. Like, never not going to call it out.
No, I love it. I'm here for it. That's what we're all about. I mean, a lot of these artists, I think people really love, but you have to be open to like hating them a little bit to enjoy this podcast, I think. So, I mean,
it's all tea.
It's all tea. Tea. And so you almost said it, but like, who would you want on the show next? Who's your suggestion?
Well, I did a really big paper on her. And I can't remember the podcast right now that this one curator did an amazing thing on. It's a murdering of an artist, I believe. You know, the Ana Mendieta story. She's a Cubana artist. And yeah, like I really like, I took on a little more of a, so we studied her a little bit modern and contemporary art and art history in my undergrad. And yeah, just her talk of more against, like, she wasn't fully with the feminists because the they're more white feminists who didn't necessarily include her and her, like, more, like, Cuban indigenous roots with that. And so kind of looking at the bullshit of some white feminists, and I'd be down to
talk about that.
And and her murdering ass husband who still hasn't been tried. So,
Writing it down.
I think it's safe to say, Baroque BBs, that in the future we're gonna have some tea, maybe curated by Evelyn here. What do you think? Yeah, I think we do it.
Yeah.
Up to y'all. Oh, yeah. Whenever.
No, this was great. I'm so glad that you came along for the ride. Did you have fun?
Oh my God, so much fun. I'm also a bit drunk. Sorry, y'all.
That was good.
I thought you couldn't tell too much. I was like, all right. Screw it.
We're
all on the same page. Well, listen, Baroque BBs, we just passed 1,000 downloads. Thank you all for listening.
It's great. That's insane, dude. What the
fucking
fuck?
Countries now?
That's
worldly global domination. No, I'm just kidding. Not at all. But thank you all so much for listening. We love you. Check us out.
Well, next week.
Podcast. And next week.
Next week, get your wig on because we're going back to the Baroque.
Back. Baroque. Okay, I'm doing it. Baroque. The wig on.
Podcast. I be making memes.
The
baby.
Wig is memes. Really unflattering on me. I'm not going to lie, but I will put it on
the
again.
The wig is beautiful. I think Chelsea rocks it a little harder, though.
Dude. I do. It's because I got a big ass face, okay?
I feel like the wig evens out the face a little
not
bit.
For me. Like, that's the problem because the wig. You need the wig to be bigger than your face, and mine's not because I got a big ass fucking face.
Oh my God.
But no, we love you.
Bye.